November 13, Economic Development Action Team Work Session.
Okay, we're good to go.
Axel's staring. You actually got it?
No.
It's four. Good morning, Good morning, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started and get a briefing from our Economic Development Action Team, which has been an ongoing process as part of reconfiguration, is looking at how we can be better at promoting economic development in the county and in all the activities that we do. So we look forward to this presentation. So I'll turn it over to you, Maria, or who am I turning it over to? Kelly?
I'm
going to
be back here because our clicker's not working quite as well as we want to catch it. So thank you, welcome, and we appreciate the opportunity to give you an update briefing here. And I just want to show you that this is a very diverse team of people, both internal to the county as well as our external partners, such as the Sewer District, Berger ABAM, Clark Public Utilities. It's been bringing a lot of diverse thought to the group, and its strategic thinking has been expanded as a result. Just to do an overview of what will be covered today, these are the speakers and their areas that they'll be concentrating on. And with that, I guess we're going to go straight over to Marlia. We have 1 hour, and so these may feel kind of rushed a little bit. We've tried to build in time for the board to be able to ask plenty of questions, so hopefully that'll work out for you.
All right, well, I'll just speak loudly. The Economic Development Action Team, as you remember, you created back in May of this year with the idea of establishing a county team that would be focusing on strengthening the economic development potential of Clark County. As a group, as we met, we decided that we wanted to take a strategic approach that we hoped would yield a greater number of jobs, a greater variety of jobs, and higher wages in the community. We've been meeting since June. I'll wait just a second or two here for some folks to wander in. And you saw that large group of team members that we have assembled. And we've asked ourselves some fundamental questions. How can we position the county for long-term success and job growth? One of the things that we started with was asking the question, well, what might be making us less successful than we really want to be at this moment in time? And something that became apparent to us in the room was that right now we have a lack of focus in our investments, lots of shifting priorities, and not enough revenue to really meet the demand that we have for public infrastructure and land use activities, which is leading to an uncoordinated response. So we thought, well, we'll have greater success if we can find a way to focus that investment, focus our responses, and give you as a board some sound financial options. We also asked ourselves another very difficult question. There have been, I think, some uncomfortable and sometimes painful questions that we have asked of one another. We asked, well, why would a strategic approach benefit the citizens of this county instead of our current approach? And our current approach is really driven by individual constituent requests. And this is not to minimize the importance of any constituent, but we ask ourselves, what do we get if we take a strategic investment approach and focus ourselves? And when we have a focused approach, we think that we can leverage the investments that you as a board might choose to make. We create greater predictability for the development community, and they can tell you predictability is very important. It creates momentum and yields a greater number of jobs, a greater variety of jobs, and higher wages when we begin to focus our responses. You as a board back in May asked us to return to you with something different. And so today's work session is really what we're going to focus at the beginning on, what's different than we've brought you in the past. So Kel, could you move to the next slide? The first thing is something different in the way we make decisions. I think you're all familiar with the concept that county government creates an environment for jobs. We don't necessarily create a lot of jobs ourselves. And we create this environment through our public infrastructure investments, through our land use plans, and through the partnerships that we develop in the community. And you can see many of our partners here today. We also know in terms of the decision making that economic development takes a really long-term approach. We think of it as setting a direction today for something that you will start to see build momentum in 3 years, 5 years. Pete comes back and says 7 years, 15 years. It takes a long time to do economic development activities. Over time, you have to adapt to changing realities, but you can't abandon your vision and your focus. So one of the things you'll be hearing throughout this morning is that the decision making that is looking at the long term is strategic, intentional, disciplined, focused. You're going to hear different speakers use those words. We know, though, even as we're doing that, you have that continual tension between the individual constituent that needs our response and the long-term investments that serve groups of constituents. Could I have the next slide, please, Kim? The second thing that we thought of for this work session that's something different is the way that we selected the investment areas that we would like to talk about today. First of all, our team benefited from the huge mass of data that we have available through our comprehensive planning process, through our transportation improvements programs. We have so much data. We started with 47 different criteria. Well, it didn't take us very long to really hone in on 4 criteria. And for us as bureaucrats, that's really kind of an accomplishment to hone in on 4 criteria. We needed to practice what we preached. The 4 criteria we really honed in on are how much investment is required to really make an area attractive for economic development, what are the constraints and barriers to those areas, how long will it take to develop in this area, remembering that how long in our view, if not starts at like the 7-year range and goes out farther than that, and what is the potential job yield, both in terms of the income, the number, and the variety? We also, as kind of a 5th criteria, applied our local expertise and our local knowledge of who's interested in various areas. Are there people who are coming up to us saying, geez, we'd really like to do something in these certain areas? That led us to focus on 2 different focused public investment areas. And in a few moments, Kel will tell you more about the actual data that we used to identify the 2 focused public investment areas that we want to talk about. Kel, next slide, please. The 2 areas that we have selected have very different potentials. We started to refer to them as the apple and the orange. They do something different. They have different needs, different amounts of time that are required to open them for development, and different potentials for job creation. The St. John's Barberton FPIA is a manufacturing-based area. It has transportation assets of roads and railroads and the opportunity to create middle-skill income jobs. Jeff Swanson is going to tell you more about the St. John's Barberton FPIA in a few moments. The second FPIA we selected is the Discovery Corridor sub-area. The Discovery Corridor is so large, we actually broke it into 4 different areas and focused on what we call sub-area number 2, which is at the 179th Street interchange. In short, this is an office and commercial area with opportunities for institutional, technology, office campus uses, knowledge-based workers, middle to higher income. This is an area with really good access to the airport, highways, ports, but it's also one with a very high cost to serve and a longer time frame for development. And Oliver is going to spend some time talking to you about this FPIA. We have Robin Krause here from the Sewer District who's going to tell you about that very important sewer component for any area that we might want to focus on. Next slide, please, Kelly. Something different, again, that we'll be talking about throughout the presentation is is in the way that we want to take action on these areas. We have a proposal for you at the end of the work session. Like any good work session, we have an ask at the end. And knowing that economic development is a long-term endeavor, you have to get started. It takes even longer if you don't have a roadmap and a commitment. We want to, in our actions, bring several departments and several community partners together to the table to coordinate our efforts. And we're going to hear from one of our partners, Helen Devery, who will be representing the CREDC, who will talk to you a little bit about the kinds of site evaluations and knowledge that's necessary to effectively communicate with prospects and effectively target your investment in the FPIAs. And so we will end that work session with a clear statement of the actions that we would like from you and before staff can proceed any farther. So with that, I'll turn it over to our next speaker, who's Kel, who will tell you about the criteria that we used and the data for the FPIAs and their ranking.
So just follow the speaker.
Okay. So as Marlee indicated, you know, there are actually 17 FPIAs that were identified by the county when the work was originally done back in 2002, but of those 17, the great majority are within the city jurisdictions, and really only a handful are within the unincorporated area of the county. And what we looked at primarily were WSUV, St. John's, and the Discovery Corridor. And WSUV was not considered one of these co-priorities, and the reason, there are probably three good reasons for it. One is that it's already getting some focus because of the Smith Route project that's locating there. Secondly, it requires very large pre-investments, primarily in transportation, but also in sewer infrastructure, and that's not really coupled with a company knocking at the door to try to recoup that investment. And maybe most significantly, it's largely dependent upon the 179th interchange capacity enhancement to allow the WSUV FPIA to actually bloom. And so because of that, we really focused mostly on St. John's and the Discovery Corridor and thought it was incongruous to try to say one is a priority over the other because they have very different needs and characteristics. And so as Marlee has said, we looked at it as co-priorities, what you might call an apple and an orange, not trying to compare them up against each other as competing priorities. So one of the exercises that EDAT went through was to try to identify what are the reasons to support each of those two FPIAs and what are the anticipated primary challenges that would be faced moving forward. And that's what you see here is just a listing of the primary reasons to support on the top and the challenges moving forward on the bottom. I don't necessarily intend to go through each of these line by line, but just so that you have that, and I can always give you a hard copy if you want to look at these in more detail. And then this is for the Discovery Corridor FPIA, same list. As you can see, it's quite a bit more on the reason to support side. Challenge will be money, of course. Then we looked at this, what you might call by the numbers, in order to, maybe I should grab the pointer.
So the top part shows the current condition, and as you can see, what we're looking at is how many jobs are currently in those FPIAs, and you might notice that the Discovery Corridor shows 1 to 4. Marlee indicated that the public investment area for Discovery Corridor was quite a large, frankly, rectangular FPIA that we tried to customize into 4 segments, and so this is really just reflecting those 4 segments, not the whole thing. And then just a quick depiction of how those jobs broke out for each FPIA in terms of their categories of employment, including the balance for other. Then we looked at the total acreage in those FPIAs. Again, this is just the segmented part of the Discovery Corridor FPIA and how those were divided into industrial and commercial and residential. And this is an important number here. That's where GIS did a DDLM analysis as to how many actual jobs producing, what you might call billable acres, are within the FTIAs. And based on this information and the future jobs potential that dovetails out of these acres, these are some analyses as to projected future transportation costs, that's mainly from our public works department, future jobs potential, which is again a calculation. This just simply shows the cumulative value of the future jobs plus the current jobs. And then the transportation cost per future job potential, the future jobs for each non-critical acre, how many get produced. And then this is quite a different number between the two, the anticipated transportation cost per non-critical acre. And then these charts are simply taking these numbers and trying to reflect it more visually, although it's kind of hard to make these ones out because they're so much smaller. The transportation job or cost per jobs acre is right here. So I think you might open the door if I hand this to you, Jeff. Yes, go ahead.
I'm losing it.
Follow the mic. Marlene, you want to pass that over to Jeff?
Mm-hmm. All right. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the St. John's Barberton-focused public investment area and its potential to generate middle-skill, middle-income employment and traded sector activity. Next slide, please. There's a clear need for additional manufacturing employment in Clark County. Such employment generally has a lower barrier to entry in terms of required labor force skill level, providing an upward pathway from low-skill, low-wage employment. With slightly less than 26% of Clark County residents holding four-year college degrees, a strategy is needed to create an environment in which industrial development can occur, creating improved opportunity for the overwhelming majority of the workforce here at home. Development-ready industrial lands, complete with amenities such as good freight truck and rail access and other necessary infrastructure, are short in supply, however. Next slide. Manufacturing wages in Clark County over the 2001 to 2011 period were on average 71% higher than the per capita income in the county for all jobs. Next slide. Manufacturing employment levels between 2001 and 2011 declined in Clark County by nearly 52%. This can be attributed to the effects of two recessions and continued structural changes in manufacturing employment experienced throughout North America, such as so-called outsourcing, as well as both increasing capital intensity and productivity in the remaining manufacturing industries, those that were not outsourced. A 2012 Brookings Institution report on manufacturing notes shifting global business dynamics resulting in a nascent reshoring trend, perhaps signaling a change in the 30 to 35 year cycle of globalized manufacturing supply chains and portending a new long-run trend of domestic manufacturing growth. Locally, we need to consider the availability of lands and our relative competitive position to attract manufacturing industries. It's likely that lands once used for manufacturing and industry in Clark County are now in some other use. We need to undertake research with regional partners to identify available lands, potential constraints such as parcel size and parcelization, transportation infrastructure, and a host of other constraints, and the returns associated with investing in the development of these lands in terms of jobs, personal income, and other yield measures. Let's take a look at a conceptual example of rail-served industrial land in the St. John's Barberton FTIA. So hopefully this will work for me here, if I get the red beam to come out the right end. Within this blue area, there are 250 acres of industrially zoned land. Adjacent to this land on the northwest border there is the county railroad. A number of transportation infrastructure projects would improve both truck and rail access to these lands. Some of these projects are planned and adopted in the financially constrained six-year TIP, while others are merely conceptual at this point. Improvements to Northeast 47th Avenue, there, and Northeast 40th Avenue, here, would improve connectivity and truck access between Minnehaha Street on the south and 78th Street on the north. With the addition of a roadway connecting 43rd to 47th Avenue and 40th Avenue, the railroad grade crossings at Northeast 43rd and 40th could be closed. With the construction of an access roadway here near Northeast 68th Street, two additional private grade crossings, those could be closed. The closure of these crossings would result in approximately 4,000 feet of continuous railroad right-of-way between public crossings at St. John's Road here on the south and 78th Street on the north. Much of this area is already triple-tracked, by the way. There's a main line and a siding on either side of the main going through that area. Additionally, consideration could be given to acquiring right-of-way and constructing rail access. I just kind of threw a line in here showing that you could pull a siding off and create more rail-served land. In addition to these, to addressing these transportation-related constraints, issues related to industrial brownfields, utilities infrastructure, and land aggregation need to be studied, producing strategies to render the area development ready. The Port of Vancouver could play a significant role as a regional partner in aggregating land and preparing it for industrial development. We need to approach these strategic plans and partnerships with vision, intentionality, and the discipline to follow through.
Thank you, Commissioners, and I will be speaking briefly on the Discovery Corridor and focusing more on the reasons why we are recommending to the Board that we focus on the Discovery Corridor area. I think it's safe to say, and I think this is clear in the data that we reviewed, that this is a great area in terms of job opportunity. This is an area that the county designated for primarily office, high class A office, as well as industrial and business park designation. It is also an area that has great potential, if developed according to plan, to generate high sales tax. You will recall that the area, as I go through the map, is in close proximity to Legacy Hospital, and that's where we have some of the healthcare jobs currently and continue to grow in the future. I think Legacy Hospital is acquiring properties in the vicinity of their current hospital with potential to expand in the future. Two, the area has great access. The county have made a decision to open up the southern portion of the area by committing to building 10 from the south, and then from the north, running 10 all the way to 219th. So it's an area that has great access and visible from I-5. The Clark Regional Wastewater is going to be talking briefly about the sewer investment programmed for the interchange area. We believe that there's going to be a critical mass once the interchange question is resolved. The board will also recall that this is an area that been approved for the local revitalization financing, and that is still in effect. If we can go to the next slide, this is, as Malia indicated, this is the entire Discovery Corridor area. And because it's huge, we segmented it into four areas. In other words, as we focus for the area, we are primarily recommending that we focus on area DC. We are calling DC2. This is the I-5 and 179 interchange. But if I may start here, this is DC4. This is where Legacy Hospital and the healthcare job is continuously to grow. And this is 134 to 139 is now being built, and that will create a great access to the hospital and the ML and light industrial development proposed in this area. This is 10th all the way to the southern portion of the Discovery Corridor, the fairgrounds. So this is DC1, and this is DC2, the interchange and I-5, and then this is DC4, north of the Discovery Corridor, all the way to the current urban growth boundary, which is 209. We are recommending DC2 because of the interchange and improvement that we believe is necessary to open up the area. We also have private developers that are interested in partnering with the county to make improvement that will spur development in the DC2 area. Now, we did talk about the opportunities. We also know that there are challenges we have to overcome. I mentioned that this is an area that the county has planned for light manufacturing, class A, potential for class A office and other retails. We are currently working with concern of individual property owners in terms of what their preference will be for the land use designation in the area. So that's one of the challenges we have to overcome. The second is the fact that the I-5 and the 179th Street interchange is currently at capacity. So that is currently hindering development taking off in the area. And we also know that sewer infrastructure is not yet available to respond to potential development in the area. Next slide. As I mentioned, there are currently low priority for the state in terms of improvement to the I-5 and 179th interchange. This is where we believe that the county commissioners can partner or engage our state house and Senate representative to leverage what improvement or to make this a top priority in terms of funding. We know that both state and federal funding is very hard now to come by. So with the state looking at transportation funding, I think Southwest Washington have to really make 179 and I-5 a top priority. We know that given the current slowdown in the economic and the slow recovery, there is interest by private developers to develop some of the properties that they own in the Discovery Corridor, but that is very slow in coming, and we're looking forward to partnering with them when they come in for their development. And we also know that there is non-existent in terms of the phase two of the Salmon Creek improvement in terms of taking it all the way to 10. So funding on that is still a key issue that the county will have to focus on in terms of moving, making some improvement to open the area up for development. I'll turn it over to Clark Regional Wastewater to focus on the sewer.
Thank you, Commissioners. Thanks for the opportunity to be at the table. Mr. Peterson wanted to be here, our general manager. He got called away to a presentation at Wazwood today, so I'm here in his place, and we'll do the best I can to present the sewer infrastructure piece of this. Robin Krause. I'm the district engineer, Clark Regional Wastewater District. So basically, there's three drivers that drive district investments, demonstrated development interest. We have a development reimbursement policies in place, so if a development's going in, we do provide the backbone infrastructure, trunk lines, pump stations, force mains. It's up to the developments to extend local collection, but we do the primary backbone system. The other big driver is coordination with county road program. So where the county's building roads, we're building sewers, and we've done this for the past few years. Since I've been at the district, it's very efficient way to get sewer extended and constructed. And then also system capacity needs. So the first two bullets are really what play into the FPIA areas, where we do have the demonstrated development interest as well as county road projects going on. So the first FPIA, the St. John's, we've already invested about $2.9 million over the past 6-7 years in this area, primarily up and down St. John's and 72nd Avenue in coordination with the county road projects. And then we built a pump station a couple years ago. And so we've already invested heavily in this area. We have another $3 to $4 million worth of investment over the next 0 to 5 years. Now I have two pointers. So we do plan to invest in this area. We do have a lot of demonstrated development interest in this area, especially tied to the road project at 119th and 72nd. We'll be extending dry sewer lines in that road project, and then expect that development northeast of that intersection will probably drive a pump station project to actually light up that area. More toward the south is already served. Just need to extend local collection lines. And then in the Barberton area, Discovery Corridor area, we do have several planned investments, including both development-driven projects, capacity projects, and things that will go along with the road projects. The 15th Avenue pump station is probably what we'll see go in first, and that's already being driven by approved residential development east of 15th Avenue, so we'll see that in the next 1 to 5 years, we expect. Additional infrastructure along 179th Street and across the interchange will be built either with development or along with the road projects. And then we have some capacity projects long-term to increase capacity in the area that will happen longer-term. Again, a lot of development interest in this area, I think tied primarily, like others have said, to that 179th Street interchange project. That's primarily all we wanted to say, but did want to say that, you know, the district's here to support this process, and we'll do what we can to provide the sewer infrastructure needed that's key to the development. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Helen Devery with Berger ABAM, and I've been working in development and infrastructure projects in Clark County for the last 20 years. I'm currently a member of your Development and Engineering Advisory Board, and I'm also the chair of the CREDC's Lands for Jobs Committee, and I've been doing that since 2010. So Kelly and Jeff asked me if I would come and talk briefly about what we've been doing at CREDC. So what we've been doing, what our adopted policies are, and what we would like to do next. So the next slide, please, Kelly. So back in late 2010 and all through 2011, what we as a group wanted to determine was, what do we really have within Clark County that CREDC could market when we've got new developers coming to town? What could we talk to them about? So we did a lands for jobs analysis. We took your vacant buildable lands model. We looked at sites over 20 acres because those were the sites that CREDC was most frequently being asked about. We could have looked at smaller sites. We should look at smaller sites. We just haven't done that work yet. So what we got out of that was about 70 sites throughout the county. We split the county up into 8 areas, one of which correlates with the Discovery Corridor focused public investment area. About 70 sites. And then we went through and ranked them. So we took information that we knew from the GIS system, information that we knew as a group about access to infrastructure, roads, sewer, water, what really could be developed. And out of that, what we got were about 13 sites that could be developed within a very short time period. And in Clark County, what we determined that to be was within 0 to 18 months. So to get through the development permit process, sites that could be developed within that 0 to 18 month time frame, we determined that there were about 13 sites, about 576 acres. And if you look at the pie chart up here, I think what's really important to point out is that from our assessment, only about 22 acres of those are in heavy industrial zoning. So our determination from that was there aren't enough shovel-ready lands available for us to market as developers are coming to town. So what did we do with that? We had that inventory. It should be a living inventory. That's something that CREDC wants to keep updated. We've not been able to do that so far, but something that we're planning to do. So next slide, please, Kelly. So we adopted a whole series of policies at the board level. We wanted to make sure that the board fully understood all of the information, so we presented this and the board agreed that as CREDC we needed to be ensuring that there is enough shovel-ready land, that we need to keep this inventory updated, we need to keep tracking it, because it evolves. Property gets sold, property gets rezoned. The next bullet here you'll see is protecting industrially zoned land, so making sure that limited industrially zoned land isn't rezoned for commercial use. CREDC needed to be involved in that. Making sure that we were at the table as, for example, you're updating your codes to allow for flexibility to give developers certainty. Again, certainty through expediting permitting and approvals. And then we looked at what the ports do within the community. So the port properties were not in your vacant buildable lands model. We added those back into the inventory, and they're very significant pieces of property that could be developed for industrial use. And so working with the ports to potentially land bank other areas that could be held in that industrial zoning for long periods of time was a policy that CREDC thought was important and adopted. And then continuing to advocate and invest in infrastructure. So from that, we've got the inventory. What are the next steps that as an organisation that we wanted to do? So next slide, please, Kelly. We've just started to come up with a market-ready initiative pilot. And what does that mean? What we want to do is take a look countywide at what a consistent definition for market-ready is, involving our public sector partners in that, defining what the entitlement and threshold process should be. So how quickly can we get land ready for development? Can we reduce that below the 0 to 18 months? And then establish a criteria for that market-ready designation that we can market to property owners and establish a path for property owners to actually take their properties through that so that they could be designated as ready to go and that CREDC could market that. Obviously, to do that, we need a funding path. And we've been looking at, are there ways that members of our board who are involved in the private sector, so consultants like me, could help private sector property owners do the wetland assessments that might be needed to get the property ready for development, help them through the permit process, get conceptual master plans laid out for them, and that maybe we could recapture some of those costs later on in the process when the property is sold and develop an evolving funding plan. All of these are things that CREDC has been looking at. We haven't put any of those in place yet, but they're all pieces that we would like to progress forward.
So with that, we're down to the end of the work session. So you've heard about the two focus public investment areas that we are recommending as co-priorities. And you've also heard about some of the next steps that might be necessary. Thank you. Some of the next steps that might be necessary. So what we're really doing here at the end of this work session is first asking you, are you inclined to say yes to the two co-priority areas that we identified, which is the St. John's Barberton and Section 2 of the Discovery Corridor? If yes, if you do say that you would like to focus on those areas, as staff, our next step would be to create for you what we're just calling an action framework, needed to have some kind of name for it. And what we would do is provide you with a high-level summary of the cross-departmental and partner actions that we would need to take to start to focus on this area, these areas. We would talk to Pete and say, okay, what's in the TIP? What might we need to add to the TIP? We'd talk to Axel. What's our legislative strategy? What might we need to do there? We talk to Oliver. What are we doing with the comprehensive plan, and how does that be either a leading indicator or a lagging indicator of what we need to do on the ground? We talk to Marty and say, what are we doing with the 60-day permit process? Are there other tools that we might be able to put into place? How long would it take us to develop those tools? So we're still looking at a quite high level, but the idea is to start to line up these various tools, including financial tools, because that's going to be very important to the success here, and kind of give you a better idea of what committing actually means. The second thing that we would like to ask you for, or ask you if you are interested in doing, is asking you if you'd be interested in approving and funding a site readiness project focused on these two FPIAs. And Helen told you a little bit about what this involves. And the purpose would be to go inside those two specific FPIAs to understand the assets and the barriers to private development, and to help guide the public investment that we might make. The site readiness project would cost approximately $60,000 and would be done by a consulting firm. So that's kind of what would happen with the yes answer. Do you want to hear about the no? I don't know that I want to tell you about the no answer.
Why don't we start with the priority areas and kind of one by one.
All right.
Go through those. So first of all, we have the Barberton FPIA. And we talked a lot about that. I don't know, Commissioner Madore, you've spoken a lot about kind of going beyond what we've done before in there. And maybe that would be really good, I think, for everybody to hear kind of your thoughts on that. Because I think there's some really good thoughts about going beyond what we've done before. And I want to recognize Commissioner Oliver, our Port Commissioner. Thank you for being here, Jerry. Certainly you and the Port Commission are our partners that we really want to engage, especially within this FPIA, to make it successful. So, Commissioner Madore, do you want to kind of talk through
regarding
your thoughts on
the cooperation with the Port?
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. If we're going to do something substantial, I would think that one of those options has to do with partnering with a very successful model for our area, which is the Port of Vancouver. You guys have been so successful in that it really has to do with your available resources in the near term. If you could somehow be able to add this to your plate, that the development along the railroad, particularly in the area of the St. John's Barberton area, where you could aggregate those lands and prepare them so we can do the shovel-ready larger areas, that would be a great plus. The real question there is, you have so much going on your plate right now. Is that a realistic time frame or not? And I invite you to the table, Commissioner, if you
want
to be able to.
If you want, Jerry, come on up. Commissioner. And we're not trying to put you on the spot at all, Jared.
No, I'm glad that you're not putting me on the spot.
We'd really like you to come in the front and answer the question, but you're not on the spot at all.
We've been successful with a strategy that we employed starting. We made a strategic decision about 2006 to build out our rail network, and because we knew, one, that we couldn't survive without it, and the alternative was not a pleasant one. So we opted to make embark upon a $275 million project. We're a little over half done now, and it's turned out to be a build it and they may come. Because of that investment, we've attracted two very large potential tenants, and we're proceeding on BHP and Tesoro Savage. To direct my remarks to Commissioner Madore's interest, today I would say that yes, our plate is full. We I'm not suggesting that the port is strapped financially, but our obligations are such that we have committed our resources, significant resources, to the completion of certain projects. Just yesterday, we passed what I think may be the largest budget in our history at $86 million. When we have revenue of operating revenue of less than $35 million, that seems a bit of a stretch. That will be that gap will be funded by a variety of financing. I think the opportunity exists because we're an $86 million budget, and the budget of Clark County is significantly higher. Clark County turns heads. You turn heads not only within the state, but also at the federal level. We have at least three good advocates for Clark County in Washington, D.C., and we can perhaps leverage that together. The important thing is that we should be cooperative partners, that we have developed certain expertise that we can share with the county. We want to share with the county. But I think that we should be partners rather than taking the lead and aggregating parcels within this sub area ourselves.
I think we'll have, and I think the plan would be to develop a strategy instead of piecemealing it. You know, really develop a strategy for what are the tools to help us be successful, and if whether it be aggregating parcels or the kinds of tools that the port has that we as a county do not, if those kinds of tools would be helpful in that strategy to get these lands market ready. You know, and we always talk about shovel ready, but really, you know, cutting the timeline, getting them available, and getting them ready for industry. I think at that time it would be more, we want to work with you along the way to as we're developing this strategy, say what role might we all play within this, and not expect the port to take the lead, but really be partners within that. And I think that's our hope, is more of it, at least, and I speak only for myself on this, but our hope is that we do move forward as partners in this, and we each are using the tools that we have to make this area successful. And you know, I mean, we have tools that we can bring to bear, and so do you, and it's just a matter of figuring out where the fit is with that. So it would be more of a process of us just kind of continuing to talk about it and get to something.
And it's important, I think, also to have to define or refine the goals that have been expressed here, and moving strategically and also moving tactically to identify parcels within this that are perhaps more ready than others, and so that we can determine how to make them market ready.
That's a great point, Commissioner. Well, and we have things that we can do to help with that. As far as, I mean, I'm a big fan of programmatic EIS work and planned action ordinances to be able to do the underlying environmental work on an area-wide, you know, an area versus a parcel, and so that you're shortening the time for environmental work that has to be done on each individual project, shortens timelines, and then you look at, man, how might we be able to, you know, would aggregating help in addition to that, but at the very least, you've shortened timelines to be able to get them to market. But there are tools that we can bring to bear as well to be able to help with this.
And I think it's a great partnership to have the port and the county working together for a common goal that will benefit us, and more importantly will benefit our citizens, because it's my lament that every night 20,000 people go to bed in Clark County without a job and wanting one. They don't want a handout, they want a hand up. Mm-hmm. And that's collectively our job, is to provide the opportunities for development and then let the free market take over. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, we have a site readiness project of $60,000 that would basically go out to a consultant and say, tell us how, tell us what. And I'm curious if there be a step ahead of that, rather than jump right into that, that would include the expertise that is available at the port, working with our Jeff Swanson here to help pull together what we already can know. And if we start with tactics that would identify what can we do nearest term, knowing that there's a long term. In other words, start with tactics, start with the short term first, and say, what can we do now? And progressively move out. I'm curious if you know what that $60,000 consultant project is and how much your expertise has been tapped already.
I don't know what that $60,000 project is. I would like to hear about it. But we are involved with the county. I've had conversations with Jeff, and we want very much to work with the county and move forward. I'm willing to hear some of the proposals.
Okay.
Jeff, can you explain more about that?
I'll pass it around. Mm-hmm. Here it comes, Oliver.
Great.
Okay.
Maybe.
And I'm going to ask Todd Johnson from McKenzie to... Is that on backwards?
Yeah.
No. All right. How about if we just do that? Axel can fix it later. I'm going to ask Todd Johnson from Group McKenzie to come up. And Todd and I have been meeting and talking about this body of work that was done in the metro region, the Regional Industrial Site Readiness Project. And I think I've shared this with all three of you at some point in my short tenure with the county. What we're interested in doing is getting a jump start on producing site readiness plans that are exemplified in this body of work, so that we understand what constraints are associated with sites, in my case, in the St. John's Barberton area around the Rye Railroad Yard, how many potential jobs can be generated there, and what the timing is to get the sites to a state of development readiness. There is an intermediary step, which we already have the inventory, which Helen spoke about, the CREDC produced. It needs to be updated as part of a larger approach. The next step would be to develop criteria with a series of stakeholders in the region as to how we prioritize sites for readiness. And correct me if I'm getting off base here, Todd. And then to take those sites that are identified through that set of criteria that's developed and do this level of analysis to it. Maybe we could pass that over. Axel, can you?
Todd Johnson with McKenzie, 601 Main Street.
Yeah,
pass that over.
And I just want to share some of our experience with regional land analysis. We've worked in the Portland metro region with several different jurisdictions, with different regional partner groups, and what we've found is that a lot of the value comes out of developing those criteria. And because you get all those regional partners to the table and everybody's talking and motivated to speak along economic development lines and talk about what it takes to get property shovel-ready and what shovel-ready means, it really starts to align all of the thinking behind that. And when you can align all of the thinking behind that through a focused area study, then there's a lot of power and energy in what you already have. It's just a matter of tapping the resources that you have now and focusing that on some public investment priorities. What we did in this study was we initially looked at the phase one of the regional lands project looked regionally in the Portland metro area. And we started off much the same way as we did with the Clark County analysis in looking at what do we have? What's in the boundary? What priorities do we have? What are the properties that are zoned and appropriate? We used similar methodologies in that project that we did in this project. And we were able to distill that down to a set of properties that were most likely to be able to be readily developed. And then based on that, the regional partners chose a select group of properties. And they said, go forth and do more analysis. And the volume two analysis there takes a look at those properties. We look at not only what does it take to develop the property, but what's the economic output once the property is developed for that intended use. So you start to build a real clear picture about, from the private development side, what's the investment needed, what's the value of the project, is there a gap between that,
And that gap is something that a private development is not going to overcome. That's a gap of investment of dollars that isn't there. The land is valued too high. The investment isn't going to pay for itself. So that gap is an area that regional partners can start to work on to fill that gap and to solve those issues. The other side of that is, why are we doing this? And that's the economic output. Once you start to look at the investment, why as a public group of citizens are we interested in economic development? The output is because it funds the goods and services that we all need. It provides jobs, but it also provides funding for government. It provides tax revenues. And that's the other side of that. So that analysis looked at that. What the $60,000 project is it's basically using what we have here as a phase one and the work that your staff has already done, looking at these two focused public investment areas and them giving us a few sites within those areas and us taking them to a phase two, us being the CREDC and the development community, not necessarily us as McKinsey. Looking at those properties in detail and trying to figure out what's the shining star in all of that, and where is that focused public investment going to yield the biggest return for not only the private industry but also the public sector too. Looking at where the taxes and the jobs are going to be most readily available and where that's going to return the highest level based on the lowest amount of risk in public investment.
So essentially the $60,000 we're talking about, we skip all of the criteria development and we as staff indicate to the consultant, we want to see that kind of detail of work for these areas within St. John's, Barberton, and within the sub-area Discovery Corridor that's of interest to us. And so we have in our hands part of what we hope will be the end deliverable from this Lands for Jobs study for the entire county, which would require a greater number of resources to take to that level of detail.
So you're a consulting firm?
Yes, McKenzie Architects, Engineers, Planners.
So there's an investment represented here. How much has been invested in this whole kind of money?
That project? That project was about a year and a half long process. It involved Portland Business Alliance, it involved NAOP, it involved Metro, Business Oregon, all the regional partners coming together to help to evolve that process. The cost of that project was roughly about $200,000 in consulting dollars plus countless hours of public matching time and effort. It's no small task. It's a huge undertaking, but the value is there. What came out of that process was a regional understanding of readiness, what land readiness means, and also a catalog of sites that has proven to be very marketable to private investors and developers, and an understanding of the gap and where to fill that, and focus on utilities and public investments. So it's
what particular decisions have come out of this? This is information to the decision makers. What changes or what actions came out of that?
Well, the actions that came out of that, the sites in that study were tiered into three different levels. They were tier 1, 2, and 3. For the second level of analysis, we looked at mainly the tier 2 and 3 sites, the sites that weren't the top tier. And the decisions that came out of that process were mainly in seeking funding for infrastructure, a better understanding of their strengths in areas, and then going out and seeking more ways to fund public infrastructure, both sewer, water, roads. Changes in public policy came out of that. Zoning changes came out of that. Policy changes for the way we look at environmental protections, environmental contamination, and how that's cleaned up and how that's managed. There's been a lot of good from the public side that's come out of that study. From the private side, of course, the private industry was very interested to know where the low-hanging fruit was, and they've been very interested in the sites that are in there. It's a pro forma analysis on a lot of sites for development. So we've seen a lot of sites that have encouraged development through that. It's a marketing product as well.
I'm curious if you could provide a list of specific actions that have been taken by the decision makers that would basically indicate the return on investment. What actually translated to jobs? How long has this been completed, and what difference does it make to the decision makers? If you could provide that list, that'd be great.
And I can. I'll have to follow up with that. I obviously didn't come prepared to do that today, but absolutely, I can definitely provide that to you.
So what I think we've done is that we've expanded on what we've identified previously. You've done a little more detail into it. And we know what we have to do as far as cutting roads through and closing those roads. I'm not quite sure which would come first. Whether we could use those dollars better in preparation of opening roads and closing roads, and then go back through, okay, this is what we have now. And then the other thing I'd be looking at, wondering how to do, would be identify a financial plan, because so much of our financial plan is already embedded or identified in projects. And I know of no other funds to tap at this time, so I guess that's where I would ask you to turn that stone over and look for us also.
And that's why we would like to come back with that action framework to help you start to see some of those relationships.
So we would maybe do that before we would go on to a consulting person to put together what we have. Or we've identified the areas, and one of the areas I was looking at was that didn't show up during the presentation of our sewer up there, and that was south of the fairground, Little Creek area. That's very hot. What you identified there did not include that southern portion.
You're referring to west of I-5.
Yeah. On the west side of I-5.
So we have the project program in coordination with the county's 10th Avenue project to install sewer along with that. So we have a backbone project program in that area.
My own impression is that that's probably as hot, if not hotter, than 10th Avenue on the east side. So.
But to answer your question, if you wanted to, we could come back with the action framework and within that explain even more clearly how the site readiness analysis fits into all these different chains and why we believe it's an important investment. It might be easier if you see it in the context of several other things that need to be done. If you'd like to do it that way, we could
that would give us a lot more information on it as opposed to kind of just seeing it as a bullet of an ask. Seeing it presented in context, and what would we get for it? What is the return on investment? What's the additional need that would be filled by it? How would it be working in conjunction with us actually doing what we know we need to do? Because, and the good news, I think, is, you know, you got a year and a half process for that. That was a large area with a lot of different partners. This is the county and two focused public investment areas that are relatively physically constrained. So I would expect that it would be a much more manageable process in looking at site readiness in these two areas. Plus, we already know a lot of what the constraints are. I mean, we can rattle them off in the 179th area with the environmental constraints associated with Whipple and G and transportation associated with the interchange. Barberton, you already rattled off some of them. So we know a lot of them. The site piece of it, though, the site readiness is different than what are the area-wide things that we know we need to do. But having that in context, I know it would help me to be able to know more about what we should, you know, how we would move forward. I like that approach of not, you know, getting more information about that before we would move.
Sure. I would really encourage our Jeff Swanson to sit down with the board commissioners and with the staff, the expertise that you have, and come up with your best emphasis that you could then advise us when it comes to the priorities, when it comes to transportation improvements, and just simply start with those things that are most achievable first. What can we do if we're going to just simply start with the shortest term, easiest, and then move out from there that will translate to decisions that we as commissioners can make in the short term that would move us in the right direction, and then I guess you could divide it into two or three stages. One would be, what can we do now? Two would be, what's the next level? And the third is, what are we going to do in order to advocate for funding from the state and maybe some plan federal in order to get the long-term funding, which is really the constraint for so much of this?
Well, that's the trick, though, is that there is a short-term need to do that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we need to funnel into this process, is that there is a transportation funding package that's being discussed. Previously, Southwest Washington had looked like they were going to potentially receive $450 million in project funding. The latest proposal has us receiving, $15 million, something like that, for Southwest Washington. It's a travesty. It's absolutely embarrassing. So we have a responsibility to get projects on that list for Southwest Washington. I've seen the project list. There's a nice long project list, and we've got like two projects for a total of $15 million. It's ridiculous. So we have a responsibility short term to be able to get information on 10th, 179th, whatever would be needed for Barkin, but make the case as to the jobs that would be produced and the need that is in existence, and work with partners to be able to get that to our legislative partners.
Yes, I would think one of the simplest things we could do, most immediate things we could do, would be to put together a letter of presentation, something that would be signed by all the commissioners, the port commissioner, all the various partners in this, and so that we're all on the same page and say, hey, legislature, hey, governor, this is our focus, and we're all on the same page, and this is why, and this is what. If you want to focus this is it right now, and get that done within a matter of a week or so.
And commissioners, I think all of that starts with the work that's being done here. It's the looking at property. It's the looking at what do we have in our inventory. It's the gaining that mutual understanding of what investment is needed to bring these properties to readiness. When you're talking about transportation projects, you want to look at what's going to have the biggest yield on that investment. Where are you going to get the most jobs, the most return on tax revenue generation? Where is the private investment going to be most likely to utilize that? And that's the type of answers that you get from this land type analysis.
And I don't disagree that is a great analysis, but we also don't want to miss the window of opportunity for funding, because if the transportation funding package and it is being spoken of by all parties that this is going to be a significant discussion next session. So it's next week, yeah, exactly. So this is coming. So if we get caught in an analysis of it, we'll miss this, and they won't be talking about another funding package for 7 years, and we'll be sitting on our hands hoping that maybe there'll be another one 7 to 10 years from now, and not being able to move forward. So we don't want to miss the window.
Right.
I've been very out of touch with all of that. When would we really need to have some kind of...
Literally within a week.
Now.
Like, we have a one-pager on 179th on the interchange. We already have that. There's already been work by CRBC and other business partners, and I actually talked to someone this morning that they're going to send me kind of a project list that the business community has been working on. But as part of the work that you've been doing, whether it be for Barberton or the Discovery Corridor-focused public investment area, whatever we can do to enhance the ask, to make the best case possible for our legislators so that they can go bang the drum about how important it is, recognizing that there's a lot more work that needs to be done, but we can't miss this window.
Well, how about if we...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So, CRABC has a legislative agenda that we adopted at our last board meeting, and it has 179th on it. It has sewer projects. So, to work with you in coordination to push that agenda further is absolutely something that CRABC would want to do.
Combine those lists that we have and prioritize those on the economic development.
Well, and if I could add a little context, this document, the industrial site readiness project that was down in the metro region and prior employment and then working with other colleagues, that helped to guide positions for the industrial business community on comprehensive plan policies, legislative strategies, transportation planning policies, and not just in a near-term sort of sense, but looking on a longer-term planning horizon, 10, 15 years. One of the interesting findings in that report was not only that the metro region lacks site development-ready industrial sites, but also the differential between what the market value was per square foot and what somebody would have to take on in terms of liability and risk, monetizing those. The differential was something like $25 a square foot. So translated, that means that the site owner would have to pay a developer $25 a square foot to take the site off of their hands and relieve them of the liability.
So, and we'll come back and get more information. I'm conscious of the time. We're 10 minutes over right now. So we'll come back and have a larger conversation about the framework and the study and how it all integrates. But I want to make sure that we put a pin in that
We have an economic development team meeting tomorrow morning. So what we could do is caucus with Axel and Pete and perhaps some of our other partners to try to put something together to meet this immediate legislative need. So we don't deny that.
What I'm thinking is we have an economic development coordinator right there. And that would be, Jeff, I'm thinking that let one person be the lead on this, to pull together what do we already know, take the lead, take the information from the CREDC, from all the different entities, pull it together in a very concise list. We can go over that and we can all get on the same page. It's going to have to be boil it down to what's our list going to look like to the legislature that's going to go for this immediate funding package that we can all get on the same page now.
So Jess is associated with the rail corridor. We want Kelly to be the lead on the FDIA in the Discovery Corridor area, just because that's the areas of the county that is responsible for.
Okay.
And I think we can take that sort of approach where we look at what the immediate informational need is. We can work on that as a team.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
The team could work on that tomorrow. Yeah. That'd be good. Okay. It is definitely a short-term priority because the conversation is occurring whether we want it to or not, and you know, we don't want to be left with y'all on this one.
And concurrently, we'll pursue these additional studies that need to be undertaken and longer-term strategies that we need to take action on today, frankly, to see them come to fruition.
Good.
Right. It does. Window of opportunity that we have right here in front of us, that has to take priority for now. We're going to get that short list together and get that fired off.
One of the other things that I heard was not just a short list, but also some good talking points on what's the return on that investment.
Yes.
Yeah, so
you need to make the case. You need to look at the other side of that and what's the return. Why are we going to invest these dollars? And why do we deserve to do more than what we've been allocated?
A couple of paragraphs, like you got to think about what is a legislator going to be able to say on the floor of the Senate, on the floor of the House, in a committee meeting that is short, that's sweet, that makes the point, that gets the money.
And if I could just go back to what we've done on this Lawrence for Jobs study, there are no sites in Clark County right now that are ready within 0 to 18 months. The 13 sites that I talked about are not within Clark County. They're in Ridgefield, they're in Vancouver. So that starts to justify why you need some of this investment.
Good. Excellent. Now, we appreciate your help on that. And then, so kind of final thoughts on the ask for the kind of the next steps. I think we have some short-term steps that we're asking for, but also then we get the action framework back with more information about what, you know, kind of what the midterm or longer-term steps would be as well.
We have a welcome app that I'm here from the port the same. We have expertise we'd like to be able to share with you, and so we want to be on the receiving side of it. You guys have been so successful. We got 98.7% occupancy.
Texture 99, I think.
Yeah, we're close. You don't get much better than that. So let's cash in on that available help to be able to know what can we do to get this engine going.
And then my last point on the FPIAs, the FPIAs that you're talking about seem pretty straightforward about, like, these would be ones that we would prioritize. I have a concern that, you know, and Commissioner Milkey mentioned it at the Discovery Corridor FPIA, that we are focusing, you are asking us to focus primarily on an area that is commercial in nature. It is not business. It is not industry. It is not, you know, the high-wage jobs that you speak of. is primarily general commercial, and it does not include some of the light industrial on the south side on the west with 10th Avenue and the connection. That concerns me. The question that I would have for this group as we move forward is why? Why should we just focus on the commercial area? And if you're proposing it because it is the low-hanging fruit, then fine. How are we going to reinvest the sales tax revenue that's generated from that area to be able to invest in the infrastructure necessary to support the real, not the real, the higher wage employment in other areas of that FPIA? Because I don't, for me, I want to, you know, throw all our weight behind, all our money behind just getting the commercial, that we're just going to spread the money that comes from it out to the, you know, to the hinterlands.
We'll take a look at that. Thank you.
That would be great. Thank you. Anything else for the good of the order on that? Thank you, everybody, for all your work on this. This is exciting stuff. This is great.
Thank you.
January, okay?
Yeah.
You got group B wells at 11:15.
11:30?
15.
11:15?
Right now. Let's take 5 minutes.
All right, we're going to put that on the last two.
Oh, thank you.